This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, September 21st of 2022. I'm your host, Hannah Stewart. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, we'll look at disparities and suspensions from Boulder Valley School District schools with a reporter from the Boulder Reporting Lab. We'll hear about the new story maps that expose methane super emitter sites. Chris Moore will bring us his regular Wednesday commentary, Make Them Hear You. Then herbalist Brigitte Mars shares her regular Wednesday feature, Naturally. A BBC News update is at the bottom of the hour, then it's the Hightower Lowdown. It's Banned Book Week, and on today's A Public Affair, we'll air a recent Project Censored episode about intensifying efforts to ban entire lists of books in schools and in public libraries under the argument of parents' rights. At 9:30, Uncle Jeff will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead this morning, but first, a look at the headlines with KGNU's Kiara Damari.
Colorado election officials determined Governor Jared Polis did not break campaign law when he sent Colorado residents a letter with their state tax refund checks earlier this summer. Chairwoman of the state Republican Party, Christy Burton Brown, filed a formal complaint claiming that Polis misled Colorado voters by rebranding the mandatory tax refund under the Taxpayer Bill of Rights as a Colorado cashback program. According to the Denver Post, Polis has said he sent the letter to explain the purpose of the checks. Republicans have accused him of using public funds for his re-election campaign. The investigators wrote that his letter fell within the confines of his official duties as governor, and the Colorado cashback program was a legislatively approved program, rather than a campaign effort, as Burton Brown had alleged. Longmont City Council members expressed their support for tax-funded countywide wildfire mitigation efforts during Tuesday's council meeting. If approved, a 0.10% sales tax will be used to fund wildfire mitigation efforts. Those efforts include strategic forest and grassland management. The tax will add one penny to every $10 spent. According to the Daily Camera, the Boulder County Commissioners voted unanimously in August to include sales and use tax questions on the November 8 ballot, accompanied with a separate transportation sales tax extension. Adams City High School canceled all classes today in order to give police time to investigate a threat circulated on social media. KGNU's Claire Purnell has more.
Wednesday's class cancellation comes on the heels of the arrest of an Adams City High School student on Monday. The student was taken into custody Monday after bringing a handgun to school with him. The same day, three separate school districts in Colorado reported having experienced swatting, in which false emergency reports are called in for the purpose of mobilizing police. Late last night, Adams City High School announced the decision to call off classes today, citing district safety protocols. The Commerce City Police Department is assisting the school district in its investigation. For KGNU, I'm Claire Purnell.
A fire in Loveland damaged five commercial trucks Tuesday morning. Loveland Fire Rescue Authority sent fire crews to Southwest 14th Street and Taft Avenue after reports of a large fire in the area and found the trucks ablaze at the scene. Crews tamed the fire within 20 minutes of their arrival. Authorities say no injuries occurred and the cause of the fire remains unknown. Developers have kicked off construction work on a new affordable housing project in Broomfield. The Northwest apartments are rental homes meant for families earning 30 to 60% of the area's median income. Construction of the 50 apartments should be complete by next fall, according to BizWest. Boulder Shelter for the Homeless announced Monday they have appointed a new chief executive director. Greg Morris will take over for Spencer Downing next month. Downing has served as the shelter's interim executive director since October of last year. According to a press release, Morris has served in senior leadership roles for homeless and at-risk populations. Most recently, he was the executive director and co-CEO of HopeWorks, the largest homeless service provider in New Mexico. There, he helped create the first newly constructed single-site permanent supportive housing project in the state. The Boulder Shelter has 160 beds and has been in operation for 40 years. Boulder City Council approved an updated comprehensive flood and stormwater master plan last week. Council members say the plan focuses on keeping flood risk under control at the 16 major drainage ways in Boulder. The 308 acres of land is owned by CU Boulder. The plan will preserve 119 acres of land and 155 acres towards flood mitigation. According to the Daily Camera, Boulder plans to emphasize the projects that do the greatest good, first by analyzing a set of criteria, including cost, effectiveness, equity, life safety, and whether it has multiple benefits. Expect a high of 61 and a low of 55 in the Denver area. Showers are likely throughout the day. The National Weather Service expects widespread showers to bring moderate rainfall across northeast Colorado, and locally heavy rainfall is possible. Peak precipitation coverage and intensity will be on this evening tonight. For KGNU, I'm Kiara Damari.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Hannah Stewart. The Boulder Valley School District released data on in and out of school suspensions. An analysis of that data by Boulder Reporting Lab shows that Latino students are suspended at triple the rate of their white counterparts. Disciplinary actions like suspensions can have a lasting impact on academic achievement and engagement in higher education. KGNU's Rosanna Longo-Better spoke with John Herrick about his latest investigation for the Boulder Reporting Lab.
You have been examining data of disciplinary actions at Boulder Valley School District for a collaborative project with other media outlets. What have been some of the standout points you have come across in looking at the data?
Yeah, so I would say kind of statewide, these disparities are quite common. You see it in pretty much every school district across the state, and it's been that way for well over a decade. Many schools have reduced their overall suspension rate, so fewer overall kids are being suspended, and that's true also in the Boulder Valley School District. Boulder Valley School District actually has a relatively low suspension rate. But when you look at the disparity in terms of the number of Latino kids they suspend versus the number of white students who are suspended, it's among the greatest in the state. And it's been that way for several years now. The pandemic, sort of a missing piece of the data, and you can't really interpret too much from years when kids were at home. But the most recent year that we have available for the 2021-22 school year indicates that the disparity is still there.
What did you find exactly, if you can give us some numbers?
Overall, Latino students who are attending schools in BVSD are roughly three times more likely to be suspended than white students just across all the schools. Boulder Valley School District recently, back in August, released data on suspensions sort of within each of their schools. And that's kind of an unusual move. It's one that I think they're doing as a effort to, you know, be more transparent about this issue and, you know, try to address it systematically. And when you look at that data, you can start to see which schools have the highest disparities, which schools have the highest overall suspension rates. The one that stood out most for me was Boulder High. When you look at Boulder High, their suspension rate is, you know, roughly on average with all the schools. But when you look at the disparity between Latino students and white students, it's among the greatest. I think Latino students are more than six times more likely to be suspended than white students. And generally speaking, this isn't part of their dashboard, but when you look at the reasons why students are suspended and across BVSD, it's really for similar reasons. You know, you're not seeing Latino students necessarily behave all that differently than white students. Generally speaking, they're being suspended for similar reasons, usually issues like threatening violence or, you know, fighting or having drugs or marijuana in their possession, things like that.
What has Boulder Valley School District say about the trends in the data?
Well, maybe broadly speaking, They acknowledge the problem. They're very open about that. They don't want this disparity. I don't think anyone would say it's a good thing. When they look at the school by school data, they do have some caution in terms of how we interpret that. I think when you look at certain schools, they have higher suspension rates, and they want to just be mindful of the fact that there's a lot of context around each of these individual schools with very different student populations and very different histories. And so they do have some concerns about comparing, say, Boulder High to Fairview, for example, and looking at disparities in suspension rates among those schools. They also have some concerns about tracking this data over time. The data that they released back in August has suspension numbers dating back to the 2017-2018 school year, but they don't really think that there should be as much credence given to those figures, given that in recent years they've really tried to make it known how to report this data and try to get schools to report it accurately and consistently. They've also just created a discipline matrix that's designed to sort of streamline how students are punished across each of their schools. So they're really looking at this most recent school year, the 2021-2022 school years, as a baseline year. And they're kind of hoping that they can start to now track which schools are making progress and how they're making progress, and kind of using the most recent data as kind of the benchmark, so to speak.
Have school administrators or school board members indicated how these data may inform future ways of disciplining students or providing more support for them?
I would say, having just spoken to district officials, I haven't actually spoken to principals about this data. The district is, for the most part, handling media requests. I have requested to speak with principals as well, and have not. And I think generally my sense is that they are probably digesting some of this data. I wouldn't say it's all that new or surprising. You know, we've seen numbers like this for years. I think in terms of what they do about it, we're going to see some new plans come out in October designed to sort of address disparities across a number of academic areas as well, graduation rates, participation in certain classes and such. And so I think, you know, we might see some of that discussed among each of the schools, you know, really in the coming months.
Is there something that you would like people to know about this issue you discover as you were digging into the data?
This is an issue that's been going on for probably way too long. And I think it's worth mentioning that when a student is suspended, they're taken out of the school for a certain number of days. And, you know, that can really have an effect on their academic achievement. It can, you know, lead to issues with their graduation and getting into advanced placement classes, for example. So, you know, we hear a lot about these statistics and these numbers, and they can be somewhat dehumanizing at times, and we're kind of maybe a little desensitized to it. But I think it's important to keep in mind that if these students in certain situations are being punished unfairly, it can have really serious consequences for their education and ultimately their livelihoods as they graduate or not. And I think that's important to keep in mind, that there are really very real impacts to these forms of punishment, especially if they're not always necessary.
I have been speaking with John Herrick, investigative reporter for Boulder Reporting Lab, about this analysis of Boulder Valley School District data on student discipline and suspension disparities for Latino students especially, or students of color. You can find this report online at boulderreportinglab.org. For KGNU, I am Rosanna Longo-Better.
Sue Super emitters are responsible for nearly 40% of methane emissions in 5 U.S. oil and gas production basins, according to a new study by Carbon Mapper, University of Arizona, NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, Arizona State University, and Environmental Defense Fund. Eric Galatis reports.
A new study mapping methane pollution across 5 oil and gas production basins in states, including Colorado, found that a small number of sites account for a disproportionately high level of overall pollution. John Goldstein with the Environmental Defense Fund, one group behind the study, says nearly 40% of emissions are coming from what are sometimes referred to as super emitter sites.
So these are big leaks. These are big problems. What that means, though, is that if we can find them and fix them, we can get a handle on this problem pretty quickly.
The Environmental Protection Agency is expected to release national standards to limit methane pollution at oil and gas sites as soon as this fall. Some critics of rules, including those passed in Colorado that require oil and gas operators to find and fix leaks and reduce flaring, have argued that the cost of implementation can be prohibitive, especially for smaller operators. Methane is 80 times more potent at trapping heat in the atmosphere than CO2 and is a major contributor to climate change. It's also the primary component of natural gas. Goldstein says companies benefit by capturing emissions and bringing more gas to market. He says the International Energy Agency, the EPA, and regulators in states with strong emissions standards reached similar conclusions on the rule's economic impacts.
And again, those state-level regulators have also found these rules to be very cost-effective. And so I think the balance of the information from an economic standpoint is on the cost effectiveness and the wisdom of getting these sorts of standards in place.
Goldstein says there is a critical need for ongoing open source monitoring of methane emissions at local and regional scales to guide efforts to reduce pollution. He says the study's findings strongly suggest that the EPA should model new rules on successful standards at work in states including Colorado.
We're finding less super emitters in the states that have been getting strong standards in place. And that's a really good headline for EPA to see as they're working to try and get similar standards in place across the U.S.
This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Colorado News Connection.
We go now to Chris Moore's weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear you.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. For decades, some people have feared that a mandatory national ID card would limit our freedoms. But 21 million Americans are second-class citizens because they have no legal ID. H.R. 8821 is new legislation to create an optional, free national ID for those 21 million Americans administered through the Post Office and Social Security to allow all people to participate fully in our communities. The IDs for an Inclusive Democracy Act would direct the Social Security Administration to, quote, produce and make available at no cost to certain individuals in the United States an identification for the purpose of allowing such individuals to meet certain identification requirements and for other purposes, close quote. This would satisfy all ID requirements nationally for the homeless, prisoners, foster care children, etc. Representatives Sean Casten and Cori Bush have introduced the act. Depending on where someone lives, state IDs can be expensive and inaccessible, and the process to get one varies hugely from state to state. Older Americans are less likely to have an ID, especially as they stop driving, but a lack of identification means they also can't access benefits like Medicare. Veterans are statistically more likely to be homeless than the general population. Veterans also need ID to access health care at VA hospitals. This bill will help veterans access the benefits they've earned. And for the LGBTQ+ community, the process of updating gender markers on vital documents is notoriously burdensome. Less than half of states allow adults to self-attest to their gender to update their state's IDs and driver's licenses. Additionally, many states still don't offer non-binary options. Homelessness is a national crisis, and we must do more. IDs are a key part of that solution. Without them, unhoused people can't get jobs, access routine health care instead of relying on the emergency room, get signed up for services, or access shelters and transitional housing. This bill could help so many Americans regain stability after homelessness. And when ex-convicts are released from prison, how quickly they find a job is a key factor in whether they reoffend. Identifying documents are often misplaced during incarceration, leaving people with no options for jobs upon release. A no-cost federal ID is a common-sense way to support public safety efforts. And finally, foster kids are often not provided any documentation at all when they age out of the system. No ID means no job, no housing, no way to sign up for education programs. This lack of support means foster kids have an extremely high rate of homelessness and are especially vulnerable to identity theft. If you have an opinion on H.R. 8821, the IDs for an Inclusive Democracy Act, you can contact your representative. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
Time now for Naturally, with herbalist Brigitte Mars.
Greetings, welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars. I hear from so many people how anxiety is really an issue for them. And there are other things we can do besides just taking more drugs. So, anxiety can feel like you've had too much coffee, that there's an electrical charge running through your body. No matter what it feels like, it's uncomfortable and can make us have a rapid heartbeat, nausea, muscle tension, affect our digestion, and cause us to breathe rapid and shallowly, which increases more carbon dioxide, which can make us feel dizzy, lightheaded, numb. So, and of course, anxiety is not good for our nervous system. So anxiety can affect us in many different ways. We do know that people are more likely to be anxious when their blood sugar's low. So if all you've had for breakfast is coffee and a sweetie thing, well, that could be a problem. You might want to have some snacks with you all the time. I like Brazil nuts because you only need to eat three or four and it's kind of grounding, good quality fats. And really minimizing sugar and caffeine and choosing more, you know, natural foods. We all know this, right? So foods that are particularly calming can include oatmeal, yogurt, unless you're allergic to dairy. Lettuce has very calming. And some grounding foods like black rice, black quinoa, black olives, foods that are black in color, have lots of minerals in them, which are really good for our kidneys, which corresponds to the emotion of fear. Taking a fish oil supplement might be helpful. And there's some herbal things that we can use when we're feeling really anxious. There's a great product made by Herb Farm called Anxious Moments, which I really like. It herbs like passion flower help to calm the nervous system. It's so profound. Kava Kava is another one. We can select calming herbal teas like catnip, chamomile, hops. And of course, these are all available in capsules as well. We might want to think about doing a B vitamin supplement and a calcium magnesium supplement. And a real simple trick is to simply open up a bottle of lavender oil and take 5 deep inhalations with each nostril. This goes right to your brain and has an immediate calming effect. So rather than breathing erratically, we're teaching ourselves to breathe more calmly. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Hannah Stewart. Special thanks to Kiara Damari, Claire Purnell, Rosanna Longo-Better, Alexis Kenyon, Shannon Young, Eric Galatis, Christian Garabay, Chris Moore, and Brigitte Mars for their contributions to today's program. If you'd like to make a comment on something you heard at KGNU, you can leave us a voicemail at 303-447-9911. We play those messages back Tuesdays during the Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for the Hightower Lowdown and then Project Censored's 2022 Banned Book Week special. That's after these news headlines from the BBC.